This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
What are your cultural associations with Denmark? For most of us, they probably begin with Shakespeare's vicious bloodletting drama, Hamlet, and end up with the children's stories of Hans Christian Andersen, The Little Mermaid, The Ugly Duckling, and not forgetting, of course, his story of the emperor who has no clothes. Now we have a new association. An otherwise obscure Danish magazine has become internationally known by printing a series of drawings intended to ridicule the prophet Mohammed, caricaturing him in various guises. In one of them, he's depicted wearing a turban shaped like an explosive bomb. The drawings, their publication, and the response to them have ignited a major worldwide controversy. To explore this controversy, I'm joined in the studio by Rahat Kurd. Rahat is an essayist and writer living in Vancouver, and currently she's working on a book analyzing the Muslim experience in North America. Good morning, Rahat, and welcome to RIDA.
Good morning, Lorraine. Thank you for inviting me to be here.
The cultural editor of the Danish magazine said he commissioned the caricatures to defend the right to free speech. What do you make of that contention?
I think it's a very interesting one for him to make with respect to the sensibility of the Muslims in Denmark. I think it's really interesting that he would feel the need to test the limits of freedom of expression with respect to a community who, you know, traditionally throughout Europe, I would say, for about roughly a thousand years, has been targeted by ridicule and insulting literature. I'm thinking of, you know, Dante's Inferno, for example, which has a really derogatory portrayal of the prophet, and just the idea of Islam or Muslims being regularly cast as the barbarians at the gate. So there is a context out of which this desire to test freedom of expression arose, and I don't think it was, unfortunately, a noble, you know, bold or brave one. I think that it arose out of a general feeling of hostility towards within Denmark. There is the issue of a traditional insular European community, a homogenous, culturally homogenous European community that's dealing with an influx of immigrants. My sense is that a lot of them are asylum seekers and laborers. I don't get the feeling that there's a lot of sort of wealthy immigrants choosing to move from the Muslim world, choosing to go to Denmark. So, like any insular homogenous society dealing with that kind of influx would be having anxieties, would be having conflicts of, you know, well, what does it mean to have these newcomers, and what is it going to do to our culture and our assumptions about ourselves? And I think that those anxieties have been hugely heightened and complicated by the war on Iraq, because Denmark is participating. I think there are about 500 troops from Denmark in Iraq, and so there must be an internal conversation going on in the country about why we're participating in this war. And of course, the dominant U.S. rationale, which, I mean, has shifted constantly since the beginning of the bombardment. But the most recent and continuous one is that this is a war against terrorism. So the portrayal of testing the means of freedom, testing the limits of freedom of expression by portraying Muslims as terrorists isn't just an objective test that comes out of nowhere. There is an ongoing, I think, feeling of suspicion and hostility towards Muslims in European countries. I actually read a study that was done just over a year ago in European countries that asked for responses about how Europeans feel towards the Muslims that live with them. And so those all have to figure into how we react to these cartoons.
What's known about the cultural editor himself and his approach to other issues around freedom of expression that might help us to kind of assess his claim here?
Well, we know it's come to light in the last few weeks that he was actually approached by a cartoonist with some cartoons depicting Christian figures. I think it was cartoons about Christ. I'm not sure. There could have been, perhaps it was to do with a specific holiday or belief or the Bible, I'm not sure. But there were Christian imagery, and it was used in a cartoon. The drawings were intended to be funny, intending to poke fun at and perhaps laugh along with Christian sensibilities, and they were rejected. And it was that same editor who said that we can't run these because they would offend some of our readers.
What do you think the reasons were that the editor published them?
I think that he saw an opportunity to prove, like, a preconceived belief about Muslims. I've suspected this all along, and here we go, here's proof that Muslims are irrational and incapable of adapting to Enlightenment values, which we hold dear in our culture. And this is a phenomenon that we've seen played out time and again. Especially in the recent past, but it is accompanied by this fear or this preconceived suspicion that Muslims, there's something in the Islamic faith that predisposes Muslims towards terrorism and violence. Even before the recent the sort of new world order of war and with the U.S. taking that dominant imperialist role, we had the Balkan tragedy in Bosnia. So that was an example of that kind of attitude as well.
I'd like to look at the responses to the caricatures. There seems to have been very little public response anywhere when the cartoons were first published 4 months ago in Denmark. And this month in Afghanistan and Pakistan, the responses were a lot more intense. What do you think the timing of the responses might tell us?
Probably that the meaning that we attach to symbols or images changes when they travel to different places, and they very much take on their own context. I don't think that we can simply say that there's this wave going around the world where that's just igniting Muslims, and it's all simply in response to the cartoons by themselves. I think that the cartoons travel with people, and they are accompanied by a different or a specific narrative wherever they go. We've since the first protests started happening in late January and February, we found out that there was a big story in the Globe and Mail about a Danish Islamic student who had actually taken the cartoons months ago and photocopied them and taken them to Syria and to other Muslim countries and tried to meet with older Islamic scholars and to try to get their response as well, and whether he's responsible for the more violent rioting and the burning down of embassies is now being debated. But I think that when we look at what's happening in Pakistan and places like that, we really, I personally become aware of the vast differences that separate Muslims economically and socially and politically. I don't think it can simply be said that we're all just living our lives and we're all just inflamed by religious passions. That is an extremely simplistic way of looking at it. I think what we really need to be questioning is the idea that it is Muslims who are responding because of a religious fervor. That is a highly problematic claim.
Would you say it's fair to say that certain governments have Have had a role in this that perhaps have exploited the situation. I'm thinking of the Syrian government.
Absolutely. I think that most commentators and analyses that I've looked at in the past few weeks agree that with respect to Syria, with respect to some of the demonstrations in Indonesia and Pakistan, and I can't think of what other. Iran is. I think in Syria and Iran, it's the governments that are the actual, people who are in positions of power, who are manipulating this as a way of again deflecting pressure, and the attention of their own people from, the day-to-day realities that they're facing in those countries, which are very difficult. In Iran, I think there's a huge amount of manipulation with respect to the actual number of people that would respond or would actually care about these cartoons or, have time to even worry about them. I think the timing of these reactions show us that there's a lot of difference, and there are a lot of different factors. I think primarily, again, political, social, and economic factors that drive young men into the streets to riot. I mean, that tells us something more than just that they're Muslim and that their religious passions are easily inflamed.
Would you say that some Muslims have welcomed the Danish publishers' efforts to provoke something like a clash of civilizations?
Probably. Again, some analysts are saying, with respect to, I think in Pakistan and in other countries, I think Beirut, the demonstrations and the rioting that took place in Beirut, those were led by more extremist religious groups. And also there was a really horrible demonstration in London where that was actually put on by a much more extremist, an extremist group that is actually considered to be outside of the mainstream Muslim community, mainstream Muslim leadership. And those organizations, I think, are very much willing to accept this vision of Muslims being cast as demons and terrorists or otherwise. And perhaps also that the flip side of that image that they're willing to cling to is this notion of their absolute religious fervor and fidelity. Their absolute, that the matter of defending the Prophet's honor is always this one that just has to stir your passions and to just drive you into the streets and make you do all of these crazy things. That's an image that I perhaps has some currency with these groups that just don't have a venue, that don't have any kind of other resources to offer their potential members.
What's your assessment of how the Western media has responded to this story?
That's probably the thing that I'm the best able to talk about with respect to all of this. One of the things that's been made clear to me is in this phenomenon, just personally, is how much separates me from Muslims in these other parts of the world, and I'm not able to speak about their reality. I haven't lived it. I was born in Canada and I've lived here all my life. And the kind of Muslim that I am has been shaped by the fact that I am a Canadian, and it has been shaped by all of the experiences that I've had. Going to public school, getting a university education, and all of the wealth that I enjoy, all of the comfort that I enjoy in this part of the world. However, the response of the Canadian media, I'm thinking more of specific commentaries that I've read, editorials by newspapers, And the casting of this issue in popular media as a conflict between the freedom of expression and religious sensibilities is one that has been it's been very depressing to me. The mainstream media is very eager to continuously accept these portrayals of Muslims as constantly encountering Enlightenment values or, you know, Western secular culture as if it's happening for the first time over and over again. And it's this perpetual image that we see in the newspapers of Muslims waving their Qurans and demonstrating for the cameras and all of the reality of the lives of people like myself, Muslims who live in the West, is just obliterated or glossed over. Those of us who have been able to sort of advance to a fairly sophisticated level of conversation about what it means to live in the West and what it means to be trying to hold on to some aspect of your faith or your identity. That those things have again been sort of wiped clean from the public arena, and that's been frustrating to see.
When a situation becomes as volatile and as polarized with this, are we just stuck with having, you know, either making common cause with Danish editors or common cause with fundamentalists and their supporters? Or do you see some kind of fertile ground, some more nuanced area in between these polarized positions where people should be going to try to kind of free up the relationship between people living in the West and Muslims who have become part of the West and Muslims who are not part of the West?
I think the place to start to find that fertile ground is for us to, think locally and to act locally, to think about the Muslims who, for I think all of us need to think about our neighbors and the cities or the towns or the regions where we live, and to just think about the relationships that we have in our day-to-day lives with the people we live with. And I think from exploring those local connections that we can learn who we really are, that, you know, that really show us that, well, our values are our multicultural values, we're not willing to live in, after all, we have progressed, or we're trying to progress to a place where we feel grateful for the lessons that diversity teaches us. I think when we start from there, and my feeling is that in Canada, it is possible to start from a kind of that sort of, what I've just said is sort of idealistic or exalted sounding, but the reality in Canada is much more realist, is a bit more exalted than it is in a place like Denmark, which is perhaps dealing with newcomers in a discourse and a kind of within the framework of tension and hostility that because it's also shaped by an ongoing war, they have a much longer and I think tougher road ahead of them. However, the fact that Muslims in Denmark themselves, it seems that they really kept their heads down and didn't want to do much more, perhaps, than write letters to the editor expressing their disagreement with the cartoons. I think that ordinary Danes, and I mean ethnic Danes, should take confidence, should take heart from the fact that, and I think that I have seen a lot of comment in the news that, Muslims in Denmark just didn't respond in the ways that we've seen around the world. And perhaps we need to, I think, again, to go back to this question of looking more sharply at Muslim identity and not using it to I don't think that it's a useful or meaningful label when we're trying to understand what's happening globally. I think globally is not a useful... It's more useful to look at the specific conditions that people are living in and the political and the social realities that are driving them to perhaps, for example, hold on to religious symbols in a much more emotional way than somebody who isn't worried about whether their child is going to get to grow up to be whatever they want to be is going to do. Perhaps when you perhaps you're much more dependent on the idea of on the ideas contained within a traditional religious perspective when you don't know whether the government is going to shut down your school or whether you're going to have a job or things like that. Those kinds of uncertainties just don't shape our reality. And so to understand and to move forward on these issues, I think it really helps if we just look at the reality within our own communities.
I really appreciate your joining me this morning. Thank you. Thank you for coming in and for the reflecting the depth of your thinking around this issue. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for your time.
I've been speaking with Rahat Kurd. She's an essayist and writer living in Vancouver, and currently Rahat is working on a book analyzing the Muslim experience in North America.